Did you know that studies have shown affirmations can profoundly influence your psychological well-being, enhancing self-confidence and reducing anxiety? Here at Positive Birth Australia, we have crafted a 20-minute birth affirmations track filled with soulful, carefully curated affirmations to empower, inspire, and guide you to deeply remember the power you hold within. And to my fellow belly birth mothers, we have created a track specifically for you to honor that all birth is a sacred moment of profound significance. For only $5, you can download and immerse yourself in our affirmations track to transform your mindset in the lead up to birth and during labor, serving as a potent reminder of the inherent power and love you possess. Visit us at www.positivebirthaustralia.com or head to the show notes and follow the link provided to start your journey toward a more empowered birth experience. Welcome to Positive Birth Australia, a podcast created to empower and educate mothers along their own pregnancy journey. Each week, I'll be sharing insightful and inspiring birth stories and advice in the hopes to help you create your own positive birth experience. I'm your host, Sky Marie. Let's get into today's show. Welcome back, everyone. On today's episode, first-time mum Bronte shares her empowering, drug-free hospital birth. Prior to falling pregnant, Bronte always assumed she would be the person who wanted all the pain relief on offer. Once she began to read birth books and listen to positive birth stories, her beliefs and preferences about birth completely shifted, realizing her body was built for this and endeavoring to achieve a natural physiological birth. Towards the end of her pregnancy, Bronte was advised to head into hospital for light cramping. While there, she was told her light cramping were actually the beginnings of labor. Excited by this news, she planned to stay for monitoring and then head home to labor in her environment. But while she was walking to the waiting room, her waters broke. As she glanced down, she realized that her waters were stained with meconium, flooding her with anxiety over the knowledge that her water birth would no longer be an option. Bronte takes us through the empowering birth that unfolded, the differences in midwives after a shift change, and how, despite under pressure, she was able to advocate for herself and make informed decisions that helped her achieve the birth she desired. Enjoy the episode. Hello, Bronte. Welcome to Positive Birth Australia. Thank you for being here today.
Thanks, Sky. I'm a big time fan, so I've been really looking forward to it.
Oh, awesome. I love that. Thank you. So to kick off today's episode, could you just let the listeners know a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Yep. So I'm Bronte. So I'm a 26-year-old civil engineer. I live on the Gold Coast with my husband, Michael, and our puppy Labrador, Lucy. So I've been with my husband, Michael, for 6 years now. So married for a bit over 2 years. And we've been really excited to start our family. And we started that journey last year with our baby girl, Violet.
I love that name. And was Violet a planned conception?
Yeah, she was. So we were trying for about half a year. So okay. It's funny, like when you're in the thick of it, it feels like a long time, but now looking back on it, pretty quick, pretty simple, very grateful.
Yeah, awesome. Actually, that reminds me, I was having a conversation the other day with a girlfriend of mine about how before trying for a baby, I was one of those kind of annoying people that's like, you've just got to relax into it. It'll happen at the perfect time. But then you actually start trying for a baby and you realize that wait feels like eternity.
It does when you're waiting those 2 weeks. And actually that kind of leads into when we first, you wait and then you do the test. So when we first fell pregnant with Violet, I had a negative test a few days, maybe 5 days or so before I had the positive test. But I just, there was something in the back of my mind that said that this was the month. It was just amazing. It came back on Valentine's Day that I was pregnant. Oh, so nice. Had to put back that bottle of wine that I bought and start the journey there.
So because it was a planned conception, was there anything you did in the lead up to pregnancy to get your body prepared?
Yeah, I was trying to keep active, walking and general stuff like that. I'd already been taking prenatal vitamins and following a bit of a stricter diet, just the New South Wales health guidelines. friends, mm-hmm. for those 6 months. Just basic stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay. And how was your pregnancy with her?
It was relatively easy. I'd say I have quite an easy pregnancy. I had that basic morning sickness between sort of 9 to 14 weeks. Couldn't eat pancakes, you know, couldn't keep, there were certain foods I couldn't keep down. But no, generally fairly straightforward, not too many complications. Mm-hmm. So my first ultrasound was really standard, all the good signs of a healthy baby. But about 10 weeks, I got the NIP test done to confirm the sex and any sort of chromosomal abnormalities. And then the results came back. All good. And the doctor gave me the results of the sex in a sealed envelope for us to open on our postponed honeymoon in Tasmania.
Oh, okay, cool. And so during your pregnancy, was there anything you did in the lead up to birth to get prepared?
Yeah, yep. So I did do a couple little things. So I did a pregnancy yoga towards the end, and I can highly recommend that. That was awesome. It focused heavily on breathing and just a bit of that, stretch and being in touch with your body and relaxing, which is something as an engineer, you know, it's a bit of a high stress job sometimes. So just noticing the cues in your body and noticing how you can go about relaxing them, I think that was really important going into the birth for mm-hmm. sure. But I was with the, so I guess things started to pick up around sort of 20 weeks when I was put in touch with the midwives at Your Midwives Varsity. Mm-hmm. So I was doing a shared care model purely because, I mean, I was a first-time mum, and I thought that that was, I had a good relationship with my GP, so I thought that would be a good way to go. And sure enough, those midwives are just magic. It was just incredible. I did opt to have a student midwife as well. So she sat in at all my appointments, and being a mum herself, supplemented with the knowledge I'd gained through pregnancy books and podcasts, absolutely immeasurable, the support that I got from the midwives and the student midwife.
Yeah, cool. Just quickly, when you say shared care, does that mean it's between your GP and the midwives, and then those midwives are at your birth?
No, see, those midwives are just supporting around the hospital. So when I get to hospital, I just get assigned a random midwife, whoever's there.
Right. Okay, so continuity of care during your pregnancy and then just correct. Whoever on the day.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
it.
Yeah, cool.
The midwives there really believed in their physiological birth, which I guess what I learned from them really supported my decision to go into my birth, hoping for an unmedicated water birth was mm-hmm. what I was aiming for. But as you know, we'll get there in a bit. What you want isn't always what you get. You got to be flexible, but the ideas around physiological birth really stuck with me and gave me a bit more confidence heading into things.
Yeah. Now, what was your perception of birth at that stage? Were there any fears associated with it?
Yeah, I think my biggest fear was around the pain. I knew my mum had good births with both my sister and I. So I had a bit of confidence there that hopefully genetics would be on my side. Mm-hmm. But look, the fear around, I guess, tearing or potentially not being supported through, my care providers or the hospital, that fear was there. But I think when I was first pregnant, I thought that I'd definitely be lining up for that epidural or any type of pain relief that I could get, no matter what. Mm-hmm. But then as I learned a bit more throughout the journey and gained a bit more support, I felt that as natural as possible was what I wanted.
Yeah. Any other resources you found helpful during your pregnancy? Did you do any courses?
I didn't end up doing any birth courses. I had mates who did it who thought it was fantastic. But no, what I did was I read a lot of books. So just your basic Up the Duff by Kaz Cook, listening to podcasts like this. There was another podcast called The Kick as well. I enjoyed that one as well because that talked a lot about the you know, the ins and outs of what really goes down in birth. And then obviously this podcast gave me confidence in my body. Mm-hmm. But apart from that, you know, doing meditation and the yoga gave me a good support network too of other mums who had been there, done that, and were also aiming for unmedicated or a bit more of a natural birth. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the Happy Fit Yoga on the coast. So it was great. You know, we all just were there every Saturday morning, and just a bit more of a community of people who could share their knowledge of they went over, you know, over 40 weeks, declined interventions, and ended up with their babies on the other side of it. So that gave me a bit more confidence too.
And what were your birth preferences leading up to your birth?
I was planning on laboring at home for as long as possible, mm-hmm. Hoping to stay in the shower, stay warm, just breathe and relax at home for as long as possible. That was my plan, and my plan was to reach the special point where you're meant to head into the hospital. But apart from that, yeah, just labor at home for as long as possible, head into hospital, go from there. Yeah, hopefully have a water birth once I hit sort of get in the water once I hit transition. In my birth plan, I did say that I would potentially have gas, mm-hmm. If there were any sort of drugs, but to not offer any drugs unless I asked for it.
And how were you feeling in those last few weeks of pregnancy leading up to birth? Were there any significant signs that you were about to go into labor?
Yeah, there were a few. So from 37 weeks onwards, I started having small signs of labor. So just before 37 weeks, I lost my mucus plug, mm-hmm. which I thought it was all going to kick off. Then a week later, I had some decent Braxton Hicks, and then that was all that was. And then a week later again, had a bit more a bit more mucus, a bit more of feeling like I might go into labor. So it was right at the end there. So I was doing a lot of those just spinning babies exercises and some pregnancy yoga just to keep in the good mindset. Lots of raspberry leaf tea and too many dates. So I guess I was very excited for the baby to come. Once I hit 40 weeks, I had headed into my midwife appointment, they mentioned something that I could do, would maybe start some antenatal expressing, which I realized you could start from 36 weeks. And I thought that was just amazing. I dialed into a lactation class at the hospital, answered some of my questions, but, I guess I sort of was really tapping into, motherhood already. I felt so confident that I could express colostrum that it gave me a real boost towards the end. And then on the day I went into labor, it was a really chill day. It was a Saturday. We just had my husband and I went for a walk on the beach with the dog, went to our favorite cafe, and then came home just to relax and put our feet up. I woke up from a nap, and in that afternoon I noticed a bit of spotting and some just period-like cramps. Mm-hmm. So I called 13 Health, just to talk to them, as I had a few other times through the pregnancy, just to sort of, talk to them and see what they suggested. And they said, look, it is urgent. You do need to be seen by a healthcare provider within 4 hours. Okay. Within 4 hours is pretty reasonable. So I thought, look, on a Saturday, the only place I can go is the hospital. So I went to the Griffith Uni Hospital here, which has a fantastic birth ward. But I figured, because I wasn't in labor, I was like, this would be a good trial run for when I eventually do go into labor. So had everything packed in the boot of the car, and off we headed to the pre-assessment center at the birth center, mm-hmm. Which was great. They were very supportive. They the midwife laid me down. She said, look, totally normal. Hey, are you experiencing one of those cramps now? And I said, yes. And she noted, hey, that's actually a contraction. So things are going for you. So I was at 40 weeks and 3 days. And she said, look, what's probably going to happen here is we're going to have to do a little bit of monitoring for 20 minutes. And then we'll probably send you on your way home to get started in labor, and you'll be coming back later to have this baby, mm-hmm. Which was exciting. That was, it was all kicking off. So what happened then was I was ushered into a waiting room where I remained for 2 hours. It was funny, you know, you sit there in the waiting room watching a bit of the news, yeah. You know, trying to have a laugh with my husband and playing the game of guess the expensive things in the vending machine. but it was good. You know, after 2 hours, I went, they did a bit of a pre-assessment on me again because they hadn't seen me in those 2 hours. They just wanted to check on Bub. And on the walk back from that to the waiting room, my waters broke.
Oh, wow.
So I rushed into the bathroom just because I had a bit of a gush. I thought, oh, that kind of feels like a bit more of the blood potentially, but turns out that was my waters. And I looked down and I noticed that there was meconium in the water. So from what I'd read and heard from the midwives, I knew that it was fairly common. You know, they say that 1 in 10 women have mech in the water when their waters break. Mm-hmm. And I also knew what that meant for me and my birth plan. So I felt a bit anxious at that time. You know, you notice it and your stomach starts turning.
Yeah, because for those that don't know, that means no water birth, correct?
Correct. Yeah, and it also meant continuous monitoring. Mm. And because I wasn't having the regular contractions, I was having contractions, but it also means induction too, potentially. So that was the big, bad, scary that was weighing on the back of my mind, mm-hmm. as well as not being able to have that water birth that I was looking forward to. So I did have contingency plans, so all hope wasn't lost, but I was worried. I was very worried about that induction because, you know, I'd read about the cascade of intervention, and that's what I wanted to avoid. Mm-hmm. So it's still just me and my husband at the hospital at this time, but because my water had broken, the very supportive midwife that I was talking to ushered me through to pre-assessment again very quickly to make sure that we could do one more once-over before they take me through to birth suite. At this moment, however, there was a shift change in the hospital. So she was great. She was fantastic. And then she told me, look, she basically warned me, hey, look, you know, this is your waters are broken. There's meconium in the water. This is, you know, what you can probably expect to happen next. Unfortunately, I'm on a shift change. So there'll be a new midwife coming in to do your pre-assessment before you then move to birth suite with a different midwife again. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, look, I felt very comforted by her, but the next lady that came through, she was very old school. She tried to talk to me through my now very heavy contractions on the table. So, look, I knew about being an advocate for myself. So I simply said, I'm contracting. Don't talk to me, please. And, you know, between contractions, she was talking about the induction, which I was just saying, look, you know, let's take a beat here. But she took my blood pressure in that time, which was high, you know, which understandably would have been so because I was stressed. I was shaking on the table. And previously, I've always had to have my blood pressure taken twice just because the first time always tends to be a bit high. So I told her in that moment, I said, look, like, let's take it in 5 minutes time, you know, and she said, it's not going to change. Mm. And because she was talking towards me so condescendingly towards the induction, I just said, look, just get me the blood pressure medication. We'll talk about the induction when you get back. Mm. So that bought me a few minutes, but I did have to concede to taking the blood pressure medication, which I didn't, it wasn't told to me at the time, but I would have to stay, Bub and I would have to stay for monitoring for 48 hours after the birth. So anyway, that would be the one sort of regret through the birth that I think I had.
Well, I mean, you were in labor, so
yeah,
you did
I know.
A pretty awesome job advocating for yourself.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it was one of those things. I just thought, you know, I just wanted a minute on the induction. Just, yeah. You know, I'll see you in a minute. So, by then, my contractions were coming quite heavy on the table, and I then was I took the blood pressure medication, and a pin was put in the talk about the induction until I got to birth suite and I would be checked. So halfway on my walk to the birth suite, once it was ready, I actually had to stop and lean on one of the desks because I couldn't keep walking. So that was a good sign to me that I was well and proper into active labor. And once I'd reached the birthing suite, I was very eager to see what my dilation was. Yep, on the bed, and the very nice midwife that I had there took my measurement, and she said, "You're at 5 centimeters. Your body is doing fantastically, and just keep doing what you're doing," which at the time was a lot of breathing, a lot of movement, and then I was free to just keep moving around the room on the few different labor positions that I had looked into. Mm-hmm.
And could you share what some of those go-to positions were?
Yeah. So I, there was a few ones. So just basically all fours on the floor, the toilet, side lying on the bed, and sort of just like rocking on my partner. Mm-hmm. At this stage, my husband Michael called my birth team. So my sister, who's actually a veterinarian, she came. She was, I guess, my backup in case my husband fainted from the blood. She's great. Yeah. So so she came, and also my student midwife was called as well. And she's just fantastic. So they all arrived quite quickly to the hospital, and this was probably around sort of, maybe 8 PM. Mm-hmm. So I had three support people in the room, including my student midwife. Mm-hmm. And everyone had their job. So, my husband was on a cold compress on the forehead between contractions job. My sister was on acupressure on my back during and around contractions. And my student midwife had the very important job of making sure my the monitor, that sort of small Doppler device that they put on you, mm-hmm. Making sure that they could get a continuous heart rate. So that issue there was that if they lost the heart rate, they were going to have to insert the probes into my baby's head for monitoring, which I just didn't want to break my flow to have to get up on the table to then for them to place the probes, because I was in such a good space. Mm. Yeah, so these contractions that were coming, they were just growing in intensity, but I felt so in control. I was 100% with it. The entire time that these were building. And I just remember, you know, there was a lot of cursing and hitting the floor when they were happening, but there was the breaks between the contractions. And I kept moving between the positions that that felt good. And then all of a sudden I could just feel the urge to push. And I pushed. No one told me to hold up or anything. I started pushing, and I just light pushing, and I looked to the midwife in the room, and I said, between contractions, and I said, look, I would like to get checked again. So this was just a few hours. My waters broke at 7, just a few hours into the labor. I was actually asking to be checked again because I was really pushing, and I really wanted to know that I was, you know, very dilated at that point. And between contractions, I moved to the bed, and she checked me again, and sure enough, I was at 8 centimeters.
Wow.
And at that point, it hadn't crossed my mind to take drugs at all. Like, I'd been so focused on breathing and keeping my body relaxed that it just hadn't even occurred to me to ask for any sort of pain relief. And now that I was at 8 centimeters, I figured just keep going. And look, there was a little bit in the back of my head that thought, look, I really hope that you know, traditional midwife was still on when my baby was born. I'm like, I can get through this and have the birth that I wanted to have. So maybe a little spiteful, but I just had this real energy coursing through me.
Love that.
Yeah, and the fact that I was still so present and could ask for things and move between the contractions, I was feeling good. So at 8 centimeters, then I moved back to the floor. So through transition, I found my groove, just all fours on the floor with balancing, pushing against the exercise ball on my head. There was something about that position. I'm not sure. It's just whether it must have been the pressure or something. Yeah. But, yeah, my job was just breathing and getting through it. And, you know, a short time later, the midwives noticed that, then the baby was – they could see the baby's head. Baby's crowning. So this is only a few hours in. My total labor was 6 hours from when my waters broke. So, yeah, they were crawling under me with a mirror to see the baby's head, and they were surprised, and they said, look, the baby's crowning. They called in the head midwife, and she sort of coaxed me to say, hey, look, you know, you're doing great, keep doing what you're doing, would you be able to move to the bed and keep doing what you're doing? And sure enough, I felt good. I just thought, yep, no, easy, can do that. Between contractions, I shifted myself to the bed, still on all fours, and they raised the bed up to sort of help with that sort of squatting type position. And I felt great. I had my team sort of up the front of me, sort of reminding me that I was doing a good job. And the baby was nearly here. And as I was pushing, I had my sister told me that the head midwife had called the OBGYNs in, which if you had meconium in the water, there has to be OBGYNs just in case something goes wrong with the baby's lungs when they're born. The OBGYNs were called, and apparently they said on the phone, no, this lady's having – the baby's going to be out in, I think they said in half an hour or something. They said, oh, no, I think they said in 5 minutes. She said 5 to 10 minutes, this baby's coming. So apparently your OBGYNs rushed in. I was, and they just sort of stood at the back. So and the other midwives came in as well. So I was leisurely sort of pushing with the flow, riding the wave on all fours on the bed. They wanted to see a bit more progress. And I felt like I wanted to move positions at that time as well. So we moved to a side lying position for the baby, which I was still quite happy to labor in that position. After a bit of that, the head midwife said that she would like to see me on my back pushing.
Oh, okay.
Which I was a bit worried about it at the time, having read what I'd read and talked to the midwives I'd talked to. But I was willing to give it a go. So I was laying on my back, and I felt really good progress. So I was happy about that. I was happy I was wrong about that. So for my particular birth, there was something to do with her positioning that really helped there. And there were three midwives in total in the room who were providing counter pressure all around my vagina. And the perineum, supporting the perineum. It was just they were just holding it all together. It was incredible. Yeah, so I at that stage I was pushing, and they kept saying, look, all you need to do is get down past the eyebrows. You know, once you get down to there, to that stage, it's easy sailing. And the next thing I really remember there is they said, what long eyelashes she had. I, at that stage, I just thought, oh my goodness, like we're down, we're past the eyebrows. Let's just keep going. So the thing that happened then is that I had to push between contractions. That felt a bit unnatural. That was hard. But the purpose of that was just to hold the baby where she was between contractions. Even though it feels like you're pushing, it was more so just to hold. And so the pushing phase was just going on at this stage. I think I had probably an hour long of, in the bed pushing. So 45 minutes to an hour of that. And I think that really supported the my perineum and any sort of tearing that I had. So baby came out and my husband caught the baby at the other end, and I was so proud of him, especially going through being a bit squeamish around blood to then being fully committed to catching our daughter. It was pretty incredible. And then so Michael and the midwives put the baby on my chest, and I could see my sister and my husband by my side, and my student midwife, who'd become a friend at this point, really saying what a great job that I'd done. And it was, for that stage, it was over. Wow. it was a real roller coaster. And something that stood out to me was just that it was, I wouldn't describe it as painful. I would agree with some of the previous people I've listened to on your podcast to say it's intense. It was just wonderful. It was just an absolutely amazing experience. I ended up with a first degree tear, which really was two scratches, one scratch on my labia and one scratch in the birth canal, and that was it.
And did they do anything for that?
No, nothing. Awesome. Nothing at all. So it really was just that was probably one of my bigger fears was tearing. Mm-hmm. But by breathing and relaxing, and I think also the support of the midwives as well, they were very in tune with where I was. I think I could really have that birth and believe in my body.
Amazing. And she was quite big, wasn't she?
Yeah, she was. She ended up being, she was a 4-kilo baby. Oh, so no. very surprising. She wasn't measuring big on any of the ultrasounds I had, just sort of, regular. Mm-hmm. But I think once I measured her and everything, she was on the 75th percentile for pretty much everything. Head size, weight, length.
Oh wow, there you go.
Yeah, no, so she was a bit bigger, and I think they did recognize that as she was coming out too. They did note that she was a big baby as she was being born. Mm-hmm. But there was such an energy in the room after I gave birth that I feel like everyone felt that they witnessed something very special. Because it is a bit animalistic. You kind of give yourself over to this experience that's happening to you. And then your baby's on your chest and you get to do that first feed. And it was just amazing.
Oh, so beautiful. Did they leave her on your chest?
Yes. Yeah, she was. Yeah. Even when they were doing the fundal massage, which no one prepares you for. that was bizarre. While they were getting I did have the injection for the placenta. Mm-hmm. But it still took it took 45 minutes for them to get my placenta out anyway. Even with the injection. Yeah. I mean, like, I probably shouldn't have even bothered, to be honest, but I kind of thought it'd be quicker.
Yeah, you think so.
But no, Bub was on my chest the whole time, and I was talking to my support team while they were sort of going about a few different things.
And were you just on a total high?
I was. I was absolutely on a high. Yeah. There were, I was just really proud of everyone. I was proud of my student midwife for keeping that monitor on the whole time, which meant that I didn't have to have any intervention there. My husband for, saying the words of support, and also my sister for being able to, read up on this massage and acupressure and sort of be there. She was very one with the team, because even when they were sort of inspecting me towards the end, she – she knows animals, so she knows the birthing process there. So the head midwife was talking her through what they were looking for as well. And it was just, it was a very cool experience.
Yeah, for sure. And did you do anything special with your placenta?
I was going to in the end, but call it mum brain, but because I ended up in the hospital a few extra days, I forgot to get my family to take it home, put it in their fridge. I ended up having to dispose of it, unfortunately, but I was looking to plant it under a tree, but instead of that, I've just planted a magnolia tree in the backyard anyway to celebrate a birth. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. And even though you had a great experience, would there be anything you would do differently second time around?
If I did, I think that I would maybe do the continuity of care through the hospital. Even though I had such a great time with shared care, I'd probably just try something a bit different and just go straight through the hospital potentially. Mm-hmm. I'd start pregnancy yoga earlier. I waited until pretty deep in the third trimester to give that a go. And then maybe even just do some of the, spinning babies exercises earlier, just to be really in touch with my bump. And I love doing belly mapping throughout the pregnancy. So I think just coming in armed with the knowledge I have now and just a bit of magic around pregnancy, I think I would do more things to enjoy it while it lasted.
Yeah, okay.
Everything the midwife said as I went to my appointments is just – it was just incredible. I just thought they just had some, they were wizards pretty much. So yeah, no, I would really be looking forward to that. If it were to happen again. So it was a very, very special experience. Yeah. Especially being my first, I just couldn't imagine it going better.
Yeah. How perfect.
Yeah.
So looking at your entire experience, what would be your key piece of advice for any expectant mothers out there?
I think my key piece of advice would read up and become knowledgeable in the whole physiological birth process, because the better understanding you have, I think the better you can contribute to your birth and lead rather than taking a back seat, which I think has led to such a great recovery for me as well, and just general happiness and contentness about my birthing journey and my pregnancy. So that would be what I would recommend.
Yeah, I love that, because you having so much knowledge to fall back on, even when things weren't going the way that you had planned, you were still able to maintain that trust in your body.
Yeah. And then I knew every stage. I'd read a lot about every stage of labor and what happens in the body in those times. Mm-hmm. And I didn't experience that crisis of confidence through the labor, which I was expecting. I was very much expecting for that moment to come where I could think, I can't do this. Mm-hmm. But look, every time, the intensity was raised, there was something in my head saying, I'm getting closer to my baby. Which I think that was all part of the meditations I was doing, getting ready for those thoughts and reassuring yourself that in the height of it, that everything you're doing, you don't have to do again. Mm. You can move past it and soon you'll have your baby.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much. And what a journey, huh? Thank you so much for sharing it with us today, Bronte.
Thank you very much, Sky. No, I very much appreciate it.
That brings us to the end of today's show. Bronte went into her birth armed with all the knowledge, which really helped her to make the right decisions to stay in control of her birth when things could have very easily unraveled. One of the take-homes for me from today is her mucus plug. I want to touch on this one because I realize that women often think losing your mucus plug is a sign that labor is near. I personally thought the exact same thing, and I lost mine with the twins at about 3 weeks before I birthed them. So as you can imagine, that was a very long wait and it messed with my mental game big time. So this is just a gentle reminder that everyone is different. Some women do actually go into labor shortly after losing it, but it doesn't always signal labor is happening soon. So just keep this in mind, because we want you to embody calm and patience at the end of your pregnancy. I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. Let me know what you think over on the PBA Instagram. And if you love PBA, we would be forever grateful for a subscribe or a rating on your podcast platform. This helps us to continue this work and reach more women who need it. Thank you so much for listening. I will see you all next week for another episode of Positive Birth Australia.